BYU SN Saturday Night Lights for Kansas State and BYU. What does history tell us about late night kicks at Lavelle Edwards Stadium? Plus, one metric says BYU is the highest overachiever in college football to this point this season. Do the Cougars deserve that title?
Receiver Darius Lassiter talks about the production from the wide receiver room, working through frustration in games and why BYU will beat Kansas State. And let's get to know the Wildcats in a Kansas State edition of Know the Foe.
Welcome to BYU Sports Nation, presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. Happy Thursday, September 19th. I am Spencer Linton, alongside a man who is already lining up to try the new flavor of Cougar Tail, Jerem Jordan.
I may have to do that Saturday. Half the Cougar Tails will be the original maple frosting, and then they're going to break out a white vanilla frosting coming up this Saturday. So if you weren't already intrigued by number 13 Kansas State, Big 12 opener, 3-0, overachieving, Hey, we got Cougar Tails in the new packaging, by the way, which looks great. So
way better for the frosting and the durability of the donut.
Yes, which let's be honest, when those are passed out in the rock, those are flying off the shelves and they are being consumed quickly. Mitch Harper of KSL Sports tweeted, "Info you absolutely don't need. BYU in special Cougar Tail games. This is great deep info from Mitch. 2012 Oregon State chocolate loss. 2020 Western Kentucky chocolate win, which." They had a chocolate one. Were there fans of that one? I'm trying to remember.
6,000 fans.
The 6,000.
Right?
That was the 6,000
game.
Arkansas, as they say, chocolate loss. Texas Tech, bacon covered. Remember that win? Iowa State chocolate loss. K-State vanilla? So I'm seeing 2 and 3 on the specials. So hopefully it's 3 and 3.
Listen, my superstition senses are telling me BYU should not roll out the chocolate Cougar Tail very often because it hasn't boded well for BYU.
But it is
a whiteout, and this is vanilla.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. It all makes sense.
Insert joke here. But yeah. Yeah.
All rise and shout. Let's get to what's trending. But BYU at night.
Night cougs, man. Guns ablazing, fires burning, cougarettes dancing. BYU is nocturnal. I'm all in with a night game.
I got BYU winning this one.
Nostris Nocturnus, or Own the Night. BYU and the Night Cougs are back this Saturday to host Kansas State, the 13th-ranked team in the entire country. This is the latest organized kickoff time I can ever remember outside of a Hawaii game, Jerem.
Yeah.
Like 8:30? We've seen 8:15, but 8:30?
Make it 9. Like, let's just bleed into Sunday. Like, that's not a big deal around here, right?
BYU obviously leaning heavy into taking advantage of the magic of Lavelle Edwards Stadium. They have been really good at night. We'll get into the details of that in just a moment. Yesterday, we had Super Bowl champion head coach and soon-to-be BYU Athletic Hall of Famer Brian Billick on the show discussing the effect of home field advantage and how he believes BYU can take advantage of all of the circumstances surrounding Saturday night's game in LES.
Kansas State is a good football team. But BYU at home, and I heard you were talking earlier about it, some of that Lavelle Edwards Stadium magic.
Yes.
And that's important. The home field, particularly in the college game, that to create that aura, to make that team that you're playing feel like they're not only playing you, but they're playing the 65,000 fans in the stadium at that altitude. You can wear, I mean, tangibly, you can wear out an opponent.
Wear out an opponent if you use your home field the proper way. So, Jerem, what is BYU's home field advantage worth against Kansas State?
I don't know. A couple of points. I can't quantify it very well. But we know that BYU at home at night has been tough when the team's been decent. Last year, BYU was 5-7 and, you know, struggled in some games at home at night. Like we talked about, Iowa State last year was a blowout, and that was tough. But they played, you know, during the day, they played Oklahoma good. So it's not like 100% yield here, but let's look at some of the numbers, okay? So Vampire Cougs, since 21, when the kickoff's 6 or later, that's what we're calling night here, 9-2 overall, that's pretty good. 3-0 against ranked teams. So 2-21, that would be Arizona State and Utah, and 22, it was Baylor. There's your 3-0. 8-0. Record
overall
in games in September. I know our graphic says versus ranked teams again, but in September, and they win by an average of almost 11 points. Those are some numbers that are quite interesting. Now, we've got 1 year of Big 12 in this, right? So it's certainly not going to stay that high, you'd think. You'd think it regressed to the mean a little bit. But the fact that BYU plays better at night in Lavelle Edwards Stadium, we can quantify it. It is a tangible difference. And I think BYU fans are going to get up for this one because it's number 13 Kansas State. It's a Cotton Bowl celebration. It's Hall of Fame weekend, which you're hosting, which you do every year, which is exciting and fun. And then, you know, the show that is Lavelle Edwards Stadium is really awesome. So I'm excited for it. What does it mean? It means BYU is going to compete with Kansas State. I don't believe that BYU is just going to get run off the field by this team. I believe BYU will compete, and I really hope they win.
I had a number of people ask me yesterday, do you really believe that it's only going to be a 6 or 7 point game? Because that's where experts think Kansas State and BYU will finish. And I said, I think it's going to be even closer than that because of what we're talking about here, using the crowd to your advantage. If BYU can circumstantially involve the crowd, it makes a difference. Now, Kansas State is a much more disciplined team than, let's say, Arizona State in 2021. A lot of people are pointing to that sequence of events, with
although
causing all of the penalties.
There was a Heisman Trophy winner. We just didn't know it on the field for Arizona State.
I believe Kansas State's going to be more disciplined than a team like Arizona State, but the Rock can have an effect, especially in 100%. That south end zone.
Yep.
If you get that team and the opponent buried deep in that area of the field and it's third and long, they go absolutely bonkers and they can cause some issues.
What if BYU won the toss, but they chose to defend that part of the field, not the ball?
No.
Like, not defer? They're just like,
we want
the Rock.
We believe in them so much
that
we want them involved.
And they'll be involved in two of the four no matter what, right? But you start out with it. That'd be funny.
Hard to quantify what home field is actually worth.
3 point.
Every football game is its own story, like with several plot twists. But BYU, even last year, if you take the Iowa State debacle out, and that one hurt.
That's the low. Yeah, you throw it out.
They beat Texas Tech. And
is that the high? You throw that out too?
They beat a bad Cincinnati team.
What and are you in the middle?
Yeah. So BYU, what are they? And typically early in the season, they have been good. We've leaned heavily into that, which is why we thought they would go 3-0 in non-conference.
We both said 3-0, beating SMU. Not everyone felt that way. We felt strongly that BYU was going to go win at SMU. What we didn't predict was, BYU is actually going to turn the ball over a bunch and the defense is going to be unbelievable. We didn't know how. We just thought BYU would win that game. This is going to be a fight, man. This is going to be a battle. We're going to see how good BYU is. Like, the first real test. SMU is a good test, but it's not like Kansas State test. I respect Kansas State's program so much. What similar to BYU in that they're not attracting 5 stars. They're getting a couple of 4 stars. These are like, we get 3 stars and turn them into 4 and 5 stars. They're very similar. The Bill Snyder, Lavelle Edwards thing, the we've been consistently good for the last 30, 40 years kind of thing. Once Bill Snyder came in the picture, like, Kansas State took off. And BYU, obviously, since 72 when Lavelle came, has been a power. Top 10 in wins in FBS in those 50 years. So I'm excited to see this game. Like, this is one of the games, one of many, that we've circled on the schedule. But it's the first, like I said, moment game this season.
Avery Johnson will not have played or started in a game like this in his young, albeit thus far successful, career. Kansas State's quarterback will not have encountered an environment like he's going to see on Saturday night. Can the crowd rattle him? This is the biggest stadium that Kansas State has played in since he's been the quarterback and will certainly be the loudest. How much?
They did play at Texas last year.
Did he start, though?
Oh, you're saying in a start.
I'm saying in a start.
Gotcha.
Where he played.
Yeah.
Like, he's the guy. So how polished is he in this moment? We'll find out a lot of things about him.
Yeah.
If he's great, then credit to him. He deserves all the hype he has. He's a great player. But this is where home field can have a notable effect on a quarterback that is still relatively young in this type of hostile, loud environment. So I'm really interested to see how they handle it and how he handles it specifically. And I pointed this out yesterday. BYU in their first 3 games have beaten the spread by an average of 13-plus points. They haven't just covered. They have crushed it, Jerem. Crushed it. And Kalani Sitake said,
BYU by 7 would be a 13-point cover.
We're going to surprise people. We're going to surprise, or 6, whatever.
Yeah.
You know? Depending on the line you look at.
It's 6.5 right now. So if they win by 7, 13, yeah.
Just saying, BYU has crushed those odds.
Yes.
And can the crowd and the home field help rattle Avery Johnson? It's up to you. Be there on Saturday night.
Every one of you. Let's go. Next topic. Are you concerned that Jake Retzlaff is BYU's leading rusher through three games?
A little bit. Yes, because one, that points to injuries for BYU. Yep. Notably, LJ Martin. Then you throw in Hinkley Ropati. We learned that Enoch Nawahine had a shoulder injury.
I was wondering why he didn't play against Wyoming.
Yeah. Nothing was like, told to us on the sideline. I asked, said, well, we haven't heard anything. Well, he had a shoulder injury. So what does BYU have as far as depth goes in the backfield?
Yeah.
I mean, there are linebackers that are offering to switch to the other side of the ball. This is not a joke. There's been at least one linebacker said, hey, I'll run the ball if you need me to. I'll do what Tyler Allgeier did, what Harvey
I want it to be Sione Moa so bad, so there's two Sione Moas in the back, backfield. That'd be awesome.
But, yeah, it's concerning because it immediately points to injuries. LJ Martin, we expected and I would hope would have been the leading rusher at this point of the season, but that is not the case. It is
questionable,
Jake,
according to Aaron Roderick.
Now, the other side of that is it shows Jake's ability to run the ball.
BYU needs it, man.
How much it opens the offense. So I like the production. I don't mind the number per se, but I wish that he had a counterpart that had rushed for a little bit more than him. So I'm fine keeping Jake where he is. I'd just like to see LJ Martin be in front of him and be the team's leading rusher, but that is not the case.
It's what it requires. It's also what is needed for this offense. Last year, BYU did not have that threat. They stunk in running the ball. They needed a run threat from the quarterback. They didn't have it. And Aaron Roderick is going to have that guy from now on. It also lends itself to you can be a little more risk averse when you feel like you have a capable backup. If you don't, Jaren Hall doesn't practice the week of Notre Dame and he still plays in the game. Like if you had Baylor Romney in that moment, you're like, well, we can mix some things up. BYU has two guys they like. So let's see what happens. Looking at the rushing numbers, yards per carry specifically, and the number of rushes, your leader through three games, just like we all thought, in yards per carry is Pokai Haunga.
What?
At 7 yards a carry. So he looked good in limited action against Wyoming. Jake Retzlaff, his number is non-sack rushes, right? He's been sacked thrice for 22 yards. He's averaging 5.5 a pop and is tied for the most carries. LJ Martin, 4.8. I like that. Miles Davis, 4.8. I like that. Although 31 came on one rush, had a big chunk there.
Well, Jake's, a big part of Jake's was the 20-yard rush at Wyoming.
Right, but and he has three more carries, still 0.7. And Enoch did a good job at SMU. So you got dudes. Sione Moa had a couple good rushes as well. We only have so much room on the graphic. I'm looking forward to kind of what BYU does with that. I think that Jake Retzlaff might need to be the leading rusher in this game for BYU. We'll see. Like, because they've gone with the committee approach, it's not going to be, oh, yeah, Enoch Nawahine was the guy. Maybe it is. I don't know. What I'm hoping is that there's some 2019 Boise State vibes. Let me give you some numbers there. Boise State's number 14 in the country. It's a big game at home. You're playing with a couple of backups in notable positions. Not at quarterback you did, but I'm talking like running back. You had Sione Finau, who was the third string.
Oh, yeah.
And he had over 100 yards. Like, can BYU summon that kind of performance against a quality program on national TV at night at Lavelle Edwards Stadium? I hope it happens here again.
I don't care how BYU gets to 150. I just want them to get to 150. Yeah. Whatever that takes.
Yeah. And then you need 250 pass. Yeah.
If you can be close to or just over 400 yards of total offense, you're going to be in great position to win this game.
Against Kansas State, I like it.
Oh, man. Yeah. Just get to 150. I don't care how they get there. Just get to 150 rushing.
Yeah.
And you'll be in good position.
Yeah.
Speaking of the quarterbacks and running the ball, and both are very capable runners, is there a scenario where Jake Retzlaff doesn't produce more total offense, so running and passing, than Avery Johnson, and BYU still beats Kansas State?
If they establish a run with other people, like I talked about potentially, yeah, absolutely. When you talk about total offense right now, Jake is averaging 92 yards per game more than Avery Johnson. A little surprising, right? Johnson running for 62 a game. That's more than Jake's 38 a game. But Jake throwing for 280 a game. Johnson's only thrown for 163. This is not an offense that relies on the pass. They run the rock with DJ Giddens really well. And they got other playmakers on this team. It's tough to stop the run. And then they pass when they get wide open off of that. Jake needs to be able to throw the ball. I don't see a situation where BYU throws for less than 250 and is in the game. I think BYU needs to throw for a bunch. Last week, with the injuries at running back, what was the game plan? It was chuck it early. BYU threw it a lot early.
Wyoming was stacking the box.
Yes, so do what they allow. Kansas State runs a 3-3-5, and they don't blitz a bunch. So I think there's going to be some run lanes there. Can you establish the run, make it easy, get to manageable third downs to where you don't have to go for it on fourth? But if you do, BYU's 8-for-10. Aaron Roderick talked about it yesterday. In conversion downs, meaning third and fourth, they were 5-for-11. He said, I'd rather be kind of 6 or 7 for 11 there. But that third down number he's not as concerned about. I know that's a number that rubs some people the wrong way. But when you look at the numbers and you compare Retzloff and Johnson, I like where Jake's at in the amount of total offense he is producing. But he is relied on heavily. His usage rate, if you will, they talk about in the NBA, like how often are you the guy that either shoots or pass to the guy that shoots, is high for BYU. He needs to have a great game.
It's not as simple as saying, well, if Jake Retzloff produces more offense than Avery Johnson, then BYU is certainly going to win the game. Because there's that turnover scenario.
Yeah.
Now more than ever, this game, more than any other that BYU has played to date, this feels critical that BYU does not turn the ball over more than Kansas State, that they limit that. If it's at worst even. Because Kansas State just has a knack of making you pay as a team when you give them the ball back. They thrive on that. You know, I mean, Cougs hunt at night. Kansas State hunts on turnovers, and they crush your soul with them.
They have a non-offensive turnover in each game.
This is what they do. And
scoop
special
and score,
teams as well.
Returns, yep.
Like special teams and turning teams over. They're just gritty and super well-coached and disciplined and physical. So the turnover battle feels more important than ever for this game. So there is a scenario where Jake could outgain Avery Johnson through the air and with his legs by 30 or 40 yards. But if he's got one more turnover, or heaven forbid two more turnovers, Kansas State's going to win this game.
And I hope there are not hollow yards, meaning BYU's down 21 and they're able to
trucking
throw.
It
and
they're trying to get back in.
Okay, now you're plus 50. Yeah. Let's talk about the elephant in the room, by the way. How many turnovers before you think there would be an actual change? Like Jake's leash, is, if you will. I think it's two, Spence.
Against Kansas State?
Yes. I think if there's one turnover, it's not a big deal. But I think if there's two and you start to get down two scores, there's going to be a lot of rumbling. There was a lot of rumbling on social media after one, and Jake responded really well in the Wyoming game. I wonder in this game, you know, you don't want to have to go to the backup. You just don't. But if you do, I think that turnovers that end up being terminal or they score off them soon after, that could be dangerous. So if Jake takes care of the ball and BYU's in the game, everything's great. But I think he needs to really take care of it. Otherwise, things get a little weird. I don't want him to get weird.
No, and it's not just
on him. But let's acknowledge that they could if turnovers happen.
The rest of the team, like BYU could turn it over with fumbles of other players. And
right. I'm talking Jake turnovers.
It just depends on how the turnovers happen. What if it's just an unfortunate batted ball up in the air and it falls into the hands of a waiting linebacker? Like, I'm not going to punish Jake for something like
that.
The
crowd would, though.
But it's those turnovers where it's just when he's trying to make a play and he's getting tackled.
The SMU stuff.
Yes.
Where it was like, no.
Avoid those.
And
blatant errors.
And the reason he stays in there is because it's still a game. And BYU has a lead or they're barely behind. Like if Kansas State, there's two giveaways from Jake and they go up two scores, I think that's a nervous moment where you have to assess that.
Sure.
I hope it doesn't come to that. But I do want to talk out loud about it just in case it happens. Like, well, what is this like? What does that look like?
It depends on what the turnovers are and when they happen and how they happen.
Did Kansas State go up 21-3 after that? Hopefully not. Hopefully this is you take care of the ball. I'm not saying no turnovers. That's unrealistic. I'm saying can you limit it to one?
Just be even with Kansas State.
And if you're plus, go win the game. Don't lose the game if you're plus.
There you go. Then you get the crowd involved. Turnovers get the crowd involved.
Either way. Kelly Ford has BYU as the biggest overachiever in college football so far based on preseason projections. Does BYU deserve the title of biggest overachiever through three games? Look at this graphic. There's Brigham at the top.
Wow.
1.5 over expectation.
When I first read this, my initial thought was UNLV and Arizona State because UNLV is ranked for the first time ever. They just won at Kansas and are in a top 25. Like, who expected UNLV to be there? And Arizona State was picked to finish dead last. I love this for BYU, and I'm glad they're in the conversation. I'm not ready to dub them as the biggest overachiever in college football unless they beat Kansas State. Then I feel hands down to that juncture, they are the biggest overachiever in all of college football this season. You start 4-0 with a road win at SMU, and then you beat number 13 Kansas State. Yes. Then crown them Put it on.
You want to crown them?
I do want to crown them if they beat Kansas State. Right now, they're in the conversation, but I'm not quite ready to give that to them. I think they need to do a little bit more. And Arizona State and UNLV have done some impressive things. I mean, UNLV has a great road win against Kansas. Like, BYU, is BYU's win at SMU equal to that? I don't think so. But beat Kansas State, clearly they are the biggest overachiever in college football.
Yeah, Kansas got the weird deal where they're in Lawrence redoing their stadium. So they played at the MLS stadium, right? So
yeah, or the stadium for the National Women's Soccer League team they have.
Is that where it was?
Yeah.
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 It's semi-away, as KenPom says. Yeah, that's still a good win for UNLV, who looks really good. They couldn't tackle the quarterback. It's crazy. It's all as you go. I hate it when people are like, well, let's wait till the end of the season. No. We have a show. Like, we got to talk about
this. BYU does have two road wins.
Right.
Take that for what it's worth.
Yeah. Two road wins. One where you were a dog, right? And you won. So that's always good. It's hard to win on the road, even when you're favored. So, yeah, if you validate this with a top 15 win, yeah, absolutely. I'm not looking at everyone across the country in the same light as BYU, where it's like, oh, you know who, it's so-and-so, Boston College after they lost last week or whatever to Missouri. Not great, if they are great, but I'm more concerned about, like, winning a Big 12 game at home that you're not predicted to win. And then you can beat Baylor and you're 5-0 at the bye week. Like, now we start to have weird, fun conversations about BYU. Right?
BYU, if they got to even if they get to 4-0, BYU was, remember when, like, a month ago, BYU was projected to win 4.5 games?
Yeah.
4.5.
They will have bumped
if
up
you
to that.
You beat Kansas already. State, you've already gotten to 4, and you're not even into October.
If BYU goes 4-0, will we guarantee a bowl game at that point?
100%.
Because last year we guaranteed one after 4-1 and 5-2, and we were wrong. They lost 5 in a row at the end.
No, I would back that again. 100%.
Because they can actually run
the ball.
The
hard part about the 4-1, 5-2 last year is that was with the quarterback in play. And then Keaton Slovis was injured, and it was like redefining what BYU was.
Yeah, we don't know what that situation will look like.
I feel better even if Jake Retzlaff, again, heaven forbid, if he were not able to play, injury or otherwise, and Gary Bohannon came in, if BYU got to 4-0, with Gary, BYU is going to figure out a way to win some more games and be bowl eligible.
At least two.
For sure.
I would hope so. I am a little scared still from last year.
4.5 projected wins.
Yeah.
BYU beats Kansas State. They're already at 4 and not into October.
And if BYU doesn't win this game, you still have an opportunity to go 4-1 if you win at Baylor going into the bye week. Like, again, amazing. Above expectation. Like,
way above.
Like, I'd take 4-1 right now. I'm not going to get greedy. No, hold out for 4-1s would be amazing.
Our question of the day, along with our conversation we've just been having over the past few minutes, BYU is listed as the biggest overachiever in college football so far by Kelly Ford's metrics. These are his numbers. Again, this is not necessarily his opinion. It's just his metric system. But
that's how nerds hide their opinions.
It's in the numbers. As the biggest overachiever, yeah. 2 road wins, 1 against SMU. In your opinion, has BYU overachieved this season? At Tom Neufer on X answers, SMU is the wild card for the national pundits. A win on the road against a P4 is overachieving to them, but not many of us. BYU doesn't lose to SMU, who are 0-4 against BYU.
Yeah. It's okay to say fur in that situation, right?
Okay.
0-4.
0-4 history?
0-4.
Yeah.
We did a sub for Santa my senior year of high school, and we spelled it out F-E-R, sub for Santa. Ofer. Yeah, they're Ofer against Brigham. Let's play them some more.
Okay. So, again, that's one BYU fan saying, not really. But
we expected this.
National pundits are certainly saying, yes, you're overachieving.
After last year, it was an impressive win because the expectations are low for
super
BYU.
Low.
Yeah.
At Y Bench Warmer on X answers, they've met expectations but look better than last year while doing it.
Yes.
When they beat Kansas State on Saturday,
yes,
then they will have exceeded expectations.
It's not a game you're supposed to win. You're not. You're the 5-7 team who's jumped out quick. You've looked pretty good so far. Kansas State is legit. They just pounded Arizona. Like, an Arizona team that had a 9-game win streak, by the way. Like, they ended the nation's longest win streak in the country.
Yes.
Arizona won the last 7 last year, the first 2 this year. That was impressive. That was impressive.
Does Kansas State have any type of big win hangover and then on the road late?
By the way, Kansas State, Oklahoma State next week.
Oh, are they overlooking BYU?
Little distracting, maybe.
Trap game for Kansas State.
Little trappy.
Hashtag BYUSN on X, Facebook, and Instagram.
BYU and number 13 Kansas State. Pregame coverage Saturday. Come hang out with us. It's going to be awesome. 8:30 Eastern on BYU TV and BYU Radio. And then, of course, the game at 10:30 Eastern.
After the break, I go one-on-one with BYU wide receiver Darius Lassiter. How he responded to the frustration he felt against Wyoming. And he walks us through his little celebration dance. This is BYU Sports Nation.
Okay.
This goes deep. Does Lassiter bring it in with one hand? He did! What a catch! Guns it for the end zone. Wide open for the catch is Darius Lassiter! Throws on the run to the goal line. Touchdown! Darius Lassiter!
The man has a knack of finding himself in the end zone and scoring points for BYU. Darius Lassiter and my one-on-one in just a moment. Welcome back to Studio B. This is your day-to-day BYU Sports play-by-play. I'm Spencer Linton alongside Jerem Jordan. Let's hear from the receiver, shall we? Fresh off a BYU win at Wyoming, he discusses with me what was perceived as real frustration with Jake Retzlaff on the sideline and finally getting into the end zone. How many points did he expect to score against Wyoming? And, of course, had to ask him about that celebration dance. What inspired that? This is Darius Lassiter one-on-one on BYU Sports Nation. Darius, you scored a lot of touchdowns in your life, but you got your first one this season against Wyoming. Walk us through the emotions of that moment and getting into the end zone for the first time this season.
Yeah, it's a great feeling when you always can get into the end zone and get the touchdown for the team. But it was really supposed to be a play designed for Keelan. But the pocket had collapsed, so Jake kind of just did his thing maneuvering and just keeping the play alive. And I was a backside read, so his eyes go left to right, and he came back to me on the right side. We had all the time in the world to connect on that.
Walk me through the celebration specifically.
Oh, yeah. It was just something that I just seen on TikTok, so just to put it out there. I'm probably going to do something like that every game.
I like that. There's room for more of that. You mentioned the phrase in your answer, for the team, and your quarterback Jake Retzlaff talked about that because there was some perceived frustration, and he said, I'll get you one, and then you responded, according to Jake, with, I don't want it for me, I want it for the team. How do you get to that point and mentality when it is sometimes can be perceived as an individual sport, but you seem to be all in on the team?
Yeah, at the end of the day, we play a team sport. We don't play tennis. So anytime I do something, it's not just going to benefit me. It benefits the whole team. So, I know I was frustrated, but it more so wasn't for me because I know how good this offense could be. And I just felt like we just had a whole lot of points just left on the board that I feel like we kind of just could have put up 60 on these guys. So the frustration kind of just crept in. But me and Jake just talked out. It was like, hey, I got you. It's like, it's not for me, it's for us. We all trying to go to the same place. So my individual stats don't do nothing but help the team.
You mentioned you feel like you could have put up more points. So now that you've reviewed the film and you're doing so on a win, so it's good to learn from a win, what do you feel like you are going to do better and be ready to do better against Kansas State?
Yeah, we just got to limit all the turnovers. But we did that this week. Not saying that was Jake Fark or Cody Fall. It's just sometimes the defensive, they got there to make good plays too as well. So they practice and we practice. If it was that easy, I mean, we probably would have put up 100. So we know the things that we got to clean up on, just a little assignments and technique things that we're doing this week. And the way that we're looking right now, I think we're headed in the right way.
What does Kansas State's defense do that has your attention the most upon film review?
Yeah, anytime defenses run 3-3-5s, that kind of just gets your attention just because of all the different stuff that you can do in that. You got a U player, and then sometimes you can just disguise that with man, and then you can disguise that with just different other coverages. So it's a complex defense, but it's one that I know this offense is ready to take on because we've seen it last year.
How would you explain the vibe and the feeling around BYU football this week of practice as you gear up for what is, to date, the biggest game of the season?
Yeah, to a lot of people, it's the biggest game of the year probably for us. But to us, this is another game for us. We know what we set our minds to do at the beginning of the year. We knew that we'd be at the point that we are at now, being 3-0, and we just got to carry that over to this weekend so we can continue in the right way so we can be 4-0 next week.
Darius Lassiter is with us on BYU Sports Nation. I want to go back to a specific play on Saturday. You said your play was actually designed for Keelan Marion.
you score. But he got his on a kickoff return for a touchdown.
Yeah.
There. So walk us through your perspective of one of your best friends housing one for BYU for the first time in a decade.
Yeah, it's always a great feeling, especially when your best friend and your roommate can go out there and make that play for us. But I kind of just seen it. I heard him talking about it in the locker room, what kind of return they was going to run. So I was excited. I was waiting for it. Just to open up the half with a kickoff return is always great. So I was kind of down there on the sideline, and then as soon as I seen him cut up field, I was just screaming, "Keelan, go!" And then you can see as he started passing us, I was running on the back of the track, just trying to meet him in the end zone. So it's great that he just got to experience that in the team as well. It's been like 10 some years since we had our last one, and Coach Pop did a great job of special teams calling it up.
How long has Keelan been talking about the fact that he's going to do that as your roommate?
He was talking about that since last year, so to finally see it happen, he had a lot of close ones. He had one call back last year, so it was already written.
I love that story and that insight. The wide receiver room as a whole seems to have great depth, a lot of options for Jake Retzlaff. How would you explain the atmosphere in the wide receivers room right now? Because you all want to help and get the team to another level. There's naturally sometimes there's some frustration, so how do you bond together and work through that frustration and get better as a unit?
Yeah, I think we feed off each other's energy. So once Chase makes a play, that kind of gets us going and be like, okay, I need to make one too, just because everybody, they like when they see us making plays downfield and doing the things that we do. I feel like we have the room to do that. I feel like we have one of the most underrated rooms in the nation. But we just got to keep working each and every day, and we're going to push each other.
I know you're very close with your brother who played at Kansas. You're taking on one of his arch nemeses in Kansas State. What advice is he giving to you this week as you prepare for the Wildcats?
Yeah, he's just been telling me all week, just do the thing that we didn't do since I've been to college and beat K-State. So, yeah, it's going to be a fun one. He's actually coming to this one, so it's going to be his first game in Provo, so he's excited about that.
What type of atmosphere are you preparing him for at Lavelle Edwards Stadium? Late kickoff, the wideout, the throwback jerseys, all the electricity around the stadium.
Yeah, I told him he never experienced nothing like this. He just got a little glimpse of it last year when we played them, and that wasn't even close to what Cougar Nation's going to feel like. So he's excited. He's going to be on the field pregame, so he's just gonna soak it in.
What does that do for a team when you run out in that type of environment?
It gets you juiced. I can't lie. Just when you go through the fire and everything else and the smoke, it just kind of gets you in the game day feels. And then especially when you hear the crowd just start screaming for you as you come out there, it just shows you the love and support that Cougar Nation has.
And then finally, we'll end with this. How would you explain the dynamic and the relationship between your quarterback, Jake Retzlaff, and you and all of the receivers right now?
Yeah, I feel like the chemistry between us and just the connection that we have is great. Just to go back to last game to where you can see the frustration, to where me and Jake can have that conversation with each other, where we can be like, okay, we got the next play, and then we just got to put this behind us. And we can talk to each other kind of with a little aggression, just to know, because we both got the team's interest at heart, best interest at heart. So he can get on me, and I'm not gonna take no offense to it, and then vice versa.
And finally, what can fans expect from BYU football on Saturday night?
Oh, a dub. Most definitely a win.
Love it. Darius, thanks for the time, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Darius Lasker calling his shot, Jerem.
Dubskis.
He's ready.
People confuse the difference between intensity and anger sometimes. There's a difference. I think they talk intensely to each other.
Sure, you can be frustrated and not be angry.
Yes, there's a difference. Don't confuse anger and intensity. Yeah.
Yeah, and I love that he pointed out that we can have that conversation and then move on.
Like would you rather have them not talk and be passive aggressive and sit over there? No, just talk it out. Hash it out.
But that became like a thing because it was so publicized on TV.
You caught an intense moment. And if I'm Darius, I am frustrated because there were 9 targets. I only caught the ball 3 times.
Yeah.
Sometimes he wasn't hit on time or it was overthrown or whatever. Yeah. You have that conversation. You get it better this week in practice. And then you execute against Kansas State.
Well, more Darius Lasseter in the end zone, I hope. And more production overall through the past game as we look at what Jake Retzlaff has done with his receivers. Again, we saw this during the interview. We bring it back. Chase Roberts is clearly the guy. 15 catches, an average of 17.5 a catch, Jerem.
One of these is not like the other. JoJo Phillips has the huge average because he had a 57-yard touchdown catch against Southern Illinois.
Darius only has 5 catches, but he didn't play in the first game.
Yeah. Keelan Marion, by the way, 4 touchdowns at BYU, none are receiving. 3 jet sweep touchdowns last year, and the kickoff return.
Gotta get one day this guy will receive touchdown.
Then we can see the TikTok dance he will perform. Check out the latest Deep Blue podcast featuring Chad Lewis. He explains the importance of the 96 season, the WAC championship, the Cotton Bowl, and much more. You can find it wherever you get your podcast.
Offensive coordinator Aaron Roderick will give us an update on BYU's running back depth and status heading into the Kansas State game after the break. This is BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
BYU Sports Nation on social. We're on Facebook, X, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok.
Welcome back to Studio B. I am Spencer Linton. He is Jerem Jordan. It's time to channel your inner Marty McFly. Hop in the DeLorean and let's rewind
Marty!
This date in Cougar football history as we celebrate the 100th season of BYU, looking back on some of the best wins, moments, and plays. Where are we going in the DeLorean today, Jerem?
We are going to the 80s, 1981. September 19th, of course. Number 13, BYU travels to El Paso to take on UTEP. We have no footage of this game, so here's a graphic. Jim McMahon threw four touchdown passes, BYU ran for over 200 yards, beat UTEP 65-8. When UTEP didn't know the calls, BYU was pretty good against the Miners. Steve Young got some time in the second half and also threw a TD.
There you go. Jim and Steve throwing touchdowns in the same game.
Put in blank.
65 points in a conference game. The Cougars, like they are this year, improved to 3-0 after that win. And then Jim McMahon, of course, a year later, on September 19th, 1982, made his NFL debut as the Chicago Bears starting quarterback.
It's awesome.
Date of significance for Jim.
Yeah, indeed.
Back-to-back years.
I love it.
Let's roll out today's headlines.
BYU football continues prep for number 13, Kansas State. Saturday night and a late one. Offensive coordinator Aaron Roderick gives us an update on the health of his running backs.
LJ and Folau are getting better every day. And we feel like both of them could play without a lot of practice reps. They're just veteran players that we trust. I'm not sure if they'll be ready though. So we've been giving a lot of reps to those same guys that played in the Wyoming game. And I do expect to get Enoch back. The Enoch not playing last game was sort of a surprise. We thought he was gonna be okay and ready to go, and then he wasn't feeling great on game day, but we were expecting him to be ready to roll.
Enoch clarified later he had a shoulder injury and he expects to play on Saturday, adding to what Aaron said. Pre-game coverage for Saturday's game begins at 8 Eastern on BYU TV. Check that 8:30 Eastern on BYU TV and BYU Radio.
19th-ranked BYU women's volleyball. They snap the three-match losing streak, but do so in five sets.
Again?
Their fourth straight five-set match. Three Cougars finished with double-digit kills, led by Claire Little's 17, Ellie Mortensen's 13, and Kirstie Strong's 10. BYU also saw a season high with 19 blocks from Brielle Kemivor. She had 10. Blakely Bobick had 7 kills, and the Cougars, those are both career highs in that regard. BYU now 5-3 with the win. They play at Weber State tomorrow. Are they ever going to do anything besides a five-set match?
Nope. The next one would be a record, by the way. Five would be a record in a row. Four is tied for
It's crazy.
Most. Women's soccer at TCU tonight. Cougars' first Big 12 road game. And Avery Frischnecht was named Big 12 Defensive Player of the Week after her first career goal, the game winner against Arizona State last week.
Good luck to BYU Women's Tennis, who opened their season today on the road in San Diego at the SoCal Intercollegiate Championships, which take place through Saturday.
And softball is holding a blue and white scrimmage today at 1:15 local time.
After the break, one of our favorite segments. We play Know the Foe, Kansas State Edition. How much do we really know about the important things around the Wildcats? This is BYU Sports Nation.
The Little Big Apple.
Welcome back to BYU Sports Nation. We are live in Studio B alongside Jerem Jordan. I'm Spencer Linton. Let's play Know the Foe, Kansas State Edition. If you're new to the program, our producer, which is Colton Potter, asks us great questions, and we do our best to guess our way into a win. Colton, where do we start today?
All right, today, our first question. Our graphics aren't working, so you'll just have to imagine the answers.
Okay.
Who's going first?
Question is, Kansas State mascot is the Wildcats, which is the fourth most common Division I mascot. Which of the following mascots are not more common than the Wildcats? Is it Tigers, Bulldogs, Eagles, or Bears?
Ooh.
This is for Jerem.
Jerem, you answer first.
I'll go Bears. I think Bears is the least common.
The least common.
I think those other three are part of the four.
Okay.
Bears.
And the answer is?
Say that one again.
Bears.
That is correct.
Yes. Okay, yeah. Bears beats Battlestar Galactica.
And Bulldogs in this matter. And everything else on the list. Yeah.
All right, Spencer, next question. This one's for you. One of the more famous Kansas State traditions is called the Wabash Cannonball. What is the Wabash Cannonball? Is it when freshmen cannonball into the Wabash River on the last day of finals?
Okay.
A cannonball from the Battle of the Wabash that students touch for good luck outside the testing center?
Okay.
A song played by the school band at Kansas State sporting events, or a popular dish that can be found at nearby Aggieville that fans eat after Kansas State wins?
Colton, I'm going to go with A as my answer. They plunge into the river on the last day of finals.
That is incorrect.
Oh,
Gerald.
I'll go with the cannon.
The actual cannonball?
The cannonball.
That is also incorrect. Oh. It's a song played by the band.
Okay.
It's a song. Is it? Yeah. Wabash.
Nice. All right. Jerem still leads 1-0.
Okay, here we go.
On to question number 3.
All right. Kansas State University is located in Manhattan, Kansas, also known as the Little Apple.
Yep.
How many varieties of apples are grown in the United States?
Oh, in the United States?
1,000, 1,500, 2,000, or 2,500?
That many? There are that many types of apples?
I can't remember what you just said, so I'm going to say C.
Wow. That is 2,000, and that is incorrect.
What are my options again?
1,000, 1,500, 2,000, or 2,500.
I'm going to go with B, 1,500, Colton, to tie the game.
That is incorrect. It's 2,500.
Really?
That many types of apples.
I lived for a year and a half in Washington. I feel like I should know this answer.
I think I know like 5.
Right? Green and red. Granny.
Green delicious.
Golden
delicious.
Keep going.
Yeah. Fuji.
Green and red apple.
I'm a golden delicious guy.
Green. Hey, graphics now.
Yeah, we got our graphics working.
Hey.
Shout out to our graphics team.
Improvement. Okay, still 1-0. Nice. Jerem, on to question number 4.
All right, Spencer, this is for you. George Fillinger, a professor of horticulture at Kansas State University, wrote The Legend of Johnny Caw, who is a fictional Kansas settler and the subject of a number of Paul Bunyan-esque tall tales about the settling of Kansas.
Okay.
In Manhattan City Park, there's a 24-foot-tall statue of Johnny Caw. What is his shoe size?
It's B50. Size 50, whatever that is.
That is incorrect.
No!
Give me 60. Let's go.
That is also incorrect. It is 55.
Why is it 55? That's so random.
Paul Bunyan.
50 is such a nice round number, or even 60.
I know. Shohei Ohtani's going for a 50-50.
Think about it. Like, the average male is what, 5'9", and the average shoe size is 10, so a little bit of logic there. You would think it would be 45 or 50 if he's 24 feet high.
One time in high school, my dad bought me a size 17 shoe, just a single one, just to be funny. I still don't know why he did it. I have no idea.
Clearly,
why.
It was to be funny. That's why he did it.
I threw it away at some point. I don't know where it is. It's at a DI in West Jordan.
Well, you didn't laugh.
No, I didn't at the time, but I'm just like, what is this?
Okay,
give me some money.
Colton, what's next?
All right, Jerem. The 1941 graduate of Kansas State, Herbert Diamond, is famous for what invention?
Oh, yeah,
Herbert. The hula hoop, snooze alarm, upright vacuum cleaner, or diet soda?
Herbert, you dog. What'd you say, the upright what? Vacuum cleaner? Heck, let's go with that.
Which one did you say?
Upright vacuum cleaner?
Yes, that is incorrect. It is not the upright vacuum cleaner.
I can't even remember what the other options are. Diet soda and what else?
Hula hoop, snooze alarm, and diet soda are the other three options.
So random.
I'm going to go with the snooze alarm. And if it's correct, just thank you for that, because it's one of my favorite functions.
It's correct.
Yay!
It is the snooze alarm.
Snooze.
The snooze button.
Snooze. In this case, you win.
All right, last question. This is for the win. Tied 1-1.
Okay.
The state of Kansas is the birthplace of which pizza company? Pizza Hut, Domino's, Papa John's, or Little Caesars?
Ooh.
This is for you, Spencer.
Wow.
This is for the win. This is for the win.
I'm going to go with our guy, Papa John. See, Papa John's as the birthplace, or Kansas as the birthplace.
That's incorrect.
Oh.
Okay. I have no connection to anything. Although in fourth grade, I went to Orem's Sierra Park Elementary for 3 months. I read so many books. I got a ton of certificates from Pizza Hut.
Free Pizza Hut.
I've always loved Pizza Hut. So I'm going with Little Caesars.
And you should have gone with Pizza Hut. That's the correct answer.
Trust your instinct and your history.
Oh, man. Pizzette on my mission. They were like, the guy's like, oh, you guys are both named Nelder? That's my name too. We were like, well.
Yeah, weirdly, pizza sounds amazing right now.
I'm happy for you. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm good.
And it's not that weird, actually, now that I say it. It was National Cheeseburger Day yesterday. I just had a cheeseburger.
I heard that.
We talked about pizza, so I'm having pizza
today. I'm footing the bill for a guy who makes
pizza
like
for lunch.
20 or 30 million. What's up with that? I heard that. Hey, if you miss any big stories featuring stories of hope, integrity, perseverance from all the Big 12 schools, new one on K-State this week. You can always find them on BYU Sports Nation's YouTube channel and on BYUSN.com.
After the break, do you believe BYU has overachieved so far this season? 3-0, surprising answers to the question. Different than what I saw preseason, people. This is BYU Sports Nation.
Oh, we call it 3-0. No.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by The BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Welcome back with our question of the day. BYU has been listed as the biggest overachiever in college football through three games, according to Kelly Ford's metrics. So in your opinion, has BYU overachieved this season? At ZGolden715 on Instagram says, not yet, until they beat the teams that matter. Wins so far are as expected.
SMU
People,
is
I don't
not
think
as
you
expected,
expected to no. beat SMU.
No, 18% win chance with the ESPN FPI. You were a dog by, what was it? Was it as high as 10?
12.
It was 12? No, you were not supposed to win that game, BYU. That was a big upset. We both felt like BYU was going to win that game. We both luckily got that right. I'm not there yet where I'm like, BYU will beat Kansas State. There are certain elements that if they happen, I think will lead to success, of course.
When we said BYU would go 3-0 in non-conference play, I had all types of people on my mention saying, they'll be lucky to win two games. They got to survive Wyoming.
All your new Ute homies from the summer?
Not the Ute homies. They've been quieted.
They're always there. They're watching.
They've literally been quieted in my timeline.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I heard from so many BYU fans, don't even think about 300. They'd be fortunate to be 2-1. So I'm seeing some differences from just a few weeks ago in the general consensus of the idea that BYU would go 3-0. And now that it's happened, it's like, well, why? I wonder why.
That's if you believed Vegas, right? The 4.5 win total. Because BYU's above that, right? The expectation right now. So the hope is BYU can win at least 4 conference games and hit 7-5 we both talked about. Here we go.
Okay, next response from Travis Tingey on X, who says, about the graphic that has BYU the biggest overachiever, this is crazy. I know BYU is better than expected, but it's not like BYU beat Alabama. They beat a good SMU team. In my opinion, it's UNLV who beat 2 Power 4 teams and destroyed Liberty, being ranked for the first time in program history. Yeah, that's where my thoughts went.
Yeah, UNLV expected to do very little, right? And historically, they've done nothing in football. So it's been fun to watch them thrive. Watch that whole UNLV-Kansas game. And like I said, Jalen Daniels keeps turning the ball over. Like, he's dynamic, but anybody is neutralized by a turnover. Like, you've got to take care of the ball. Jake Retzlaff, Gary Bohannon, everybody.
Thus, the importance of that statistic in every college football game, and especially this Saturday night against Kansas
and
State.
And we've waited for so long, Spence, to be in big boy football, Power 4, 5 football. Here we are. BYU has an opportunity, and they're super excited about it, and they're prepping in a way to prepare to win this game Saturday. Come on.
All right. At Relgren on Instagram answers, I don't think BYU has overachieved. They pulled a big win at SMU, but that was not tremendously unexpected.
I think it was tremendously unexpected. 18% win chance? The FBI? Double-digit dog? I think that was unexpected. We just felt like BYU was going to match up better with the P4 newcomer SMU, who's
sure.
still figuring out which quarterback they want to play.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, interesting takes from the BYU fans today. And our elite
We need to keep receipts a little more then. That's what we just learned.
Seriously, early in the season, we were told we were crazy.
Yeah, and keep our receipts. It's fine. It goes two ways.
Elite Voice today presented by PAX Healthcare Elevated comes from Cougar Stats, our good friend on X, who says BYU was projected to have a 1.7 wins and 1.3 losses record by ESPN's Football Power Index in August. They're definitely ahead of schedule.
Yeah.
Vegas didn't put BYU as a 4.5 win over-under because they thought they'd start with a 3-0 record.
So far, so good.
FPI is up to what, 6.7 now from where it was at 4.8?
It's close to that 7.
BYU is ahead of schedule.
Yeah,
today's Rise and Shout Out presented by Mountain America. the official credit union of BYU Athletics.
BYU women's volleyball starts like four freshmen. They had lost 3 5-set matches in a row by two, so the minimum loss you could have. Two of those
points.
Were ranked teams. Now, BYU last night beat Utah State 15-11. Learning lessons, got that fifth set win. Now they play Weber State Friday night, UVU at home Saturday.
Take care of business.
Congratulations.
Stay in the top 20 for 162nd straight week or whatever it is.
It's up to 170, 171 for top 25 now.
That's awesome. Hey, well, let's keep going back.
Move the goalpost.
Our thanks to today's guest, Darius Lassiter.
Sorry to Dennis Pitta, you weren't a kicker.
For Jerem, I'm Spencer. Shout out to Hebron Fangupo. We'll see you tomorrow for a Friday edition of BYUSN Go Cougs.
Pizza Hut.